Welcome to Breakfast Conversations. This is the podcast where we sit down one-to-one with amazing educators from around the world. This season is dedicated to Apple distinguished educators from the class of 2019. Your host, Jacob E. Hansen, is sitting at his coffee table alone, but let's see who will join him today. I'm sure that they would be talking about education. He always does. He wants school to become the learning spaces that kids like me deserve. As the clever kid that I am, I have put up some microphones, so let's sit down over here so that we can listen to their conversations. Now, relax and enjoy.
Welcome to this episode of Breakfast Conversations. Dear listener, I'm super happy that you are listening to this podcast. If you are listening to this podcast, you are probably doing some great work in education, and thank you for that. I really appreciate that you are listening to my podcast. This is the sixth episode of Breakfast Conversations, and I try to get familiar with the format of podcasting, overcoming my fear for speaking English on a podcast, reaching out to all those great ADEs from 2019. And I would really love to become better at making those podcasts. So if you want to, feel free to give me some feedback and share your ideas with me. A lot of you in the community have already been so nice to give me some feedback and sharing it with your tweets and so on. But your feedback and your ideas can only improve it. So please reach out to me. But now to today's episode, we are back in the EMEA region and have a guest today. It's Jan from Belgium, and we are going to speak about flipped learning and gamification. And it was really, really wonderful to speak with Jan. He is an amazing educator, and we had a lot of fun in our conversation. And he is just an amazing guy that I met in Amsterdam this summer. So now let's jump into our conversation with Jan. Good morning, Jan. I'm very happy that you want to have this breakfast conversation with me today.
Yeah, very happy to be here.
Yeah. My first question, are you a coffee drinker or tea drinker in the morning?
In the morning, it'll always be coffee. Just to wake up.
To get the day kick-started.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you have some special coffee preferences that you...
I only use like vegan milk for some reason. I think it tastes better, but on the whole, coffee is coffee. It'll get me started. So that's the main reason, just waking up.
I for the first time last week tried to make my milks my cappuccino with vegan milk, because yeah. I had also there was form a very nice foam for the coffee, and yeah, I was really surprised with how creamy and delicious it is.
And you've got lots of choices, like you've got soy milk, you've got oat milk, you've got rice milk. So there's plenty of options, really.
Oat milk is my only experience right now.
Yeah, you should definitely try almond. Almond milk is like the greatest.
I'll try that.
Super.
And do you have some other breakfast traditions that you and your family like to have?
Well, it's very diverse. Like we sometimes only eat fruits or not a lot of cereal, but types of bread. There's not really one habit that we always have apart from the coffee. Coffee is essential.
That's the essential part of it.
Everything else is exchangeable, but coffee should be there.
Yeah, and today we are in Belgium.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Are there some certain special breakfast traditions in Belgium?
In the weekend, we eat a lot of like what we call coffee cookies, but don't get distracted. They're like huge. They're like, yeah, they're like, if you take a donut, you make it crispy and you put a lot of chocolate or pudding or fruit on it. That's what we like to eat, but only at weekends, since we have to watch that we don't grow too obese here. So, but mostly I think everyone here drinks coffee. That's like the general, even in comics, if they're talking about Belgian breakfast, yeah, it's coffee, right? So everything else is exchangeable, just the coffee.
Oh, that sounds perfect for me. I'm a huge coffee addict. Jan, could you tell us a bit about your work life and maybe take us through a typical day, a Monday morning when you leave your home and how it looks like?
Yeah, we're kind of rural for in Belgium. So there's like there's kind of a lot of houses, but they're all well separated. They all have a small yard, a small garden. So I could go by bike to my school. I could also go by car, depending on how lazy I am.
But you live close by?
Yeah, it's only 7 kilometers. I don't know, like 5 miles for the American listeners. And my school, yeah, it's a school about 700 pupils. We've got a new building with a new playground, which is like nice to use, very light, very spacious. And then we've got some buildings that date from the 70s, which are, well, they're not that light. They're a bit more dark. They've got old furniture, but we manage.
And the pupils in your school, what age are they? What age range do you work with?
They are 15 year to 18 years. So we try to prepare them for college as best as we can. And they're like doing all the abstract stuff. So like languages, sciences, STEM subjects, economics, all that kind.
Interesting. Tell us a bit about your subjects. What subjects are you teaching them?
I'm mostly a language teacher, so I teach English, I teach Dutch, our native language, and then as my third subject, I teach IT, which is, of course, not a language, so I'm exploring the coding part. It's the EU Code Week right now, so I'm really excited about getting into that, and I'm also a bit into the IT part of the STEM projects. So we're using this Arduino stuff, we're using Lego Mindstorms, and it's always a big discovery. What can we do with it? What can't we do with it? So it's really fascinating.
And you became an Apple Distinguished Educator this summer.
Yeah.
How exactly. Is it on the device side in your school? Do everyone have access to iPads and other their own, or how does it look in your school?
Well, my school, we're bring your own device is the policy, since our principals, they don't believe in enforcing something on the pupils. So they're like, yeah, we've got pupils who love working with iPads. We've got pupils who love working with laptops for whatever reason. So we're giving everyone the choice. But that's kind of like making it hard for coding.
Yeah.
I can't use Swift or Xcode, since it won't run on PCs. So I have to find this Google app, Grasshopper, that sort of does the same thing, but it's not that engaging. But luckily, most of my pupils have got an iPhone.
Yeah.
So I don't know where they get the money, but I've seen more iPhone 10Ss at school than in Apple stores, which is totally unbelievable. But they can use most of the apps they can use on the iPhone. So I'm using like iMovie, GarageBand, just like drop the computer. Well, not literally, but leave the computer, take out your smartphone, get your charger. We're doing this and this today. Which is like, I think it's great that they have access to the iPhones.
But as a teacher, you always need to have a multiple plans so that those that don't have an iPhone or a Apple device still can work with some content. And
and the magic word for me is group work.
Yeah.
I know in every classroom there's at least a one iPhone to two pupil ratio. So I can always work in pairs. If you've got one iPhone per pair, that's great. And it always, up until now, it has always worked out fine.
Fantastic. So you are, group work is the magic word for you. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I would like to hear a bit about why you ended up in education. What is your story for choosing this profession?
Well, I'm afraid it's not that idealistic. I was like studying at university. I was studying economics. It wasn't really going well. And I ended up in a bar with a friend of a friend. let's see if I can remember his name, Jasper. And he was like doing his internship in like this really... this school with a lot of problem students, so with behavior problems, and I was like, how do you do that? How do you teach those guys? And he was like, well, if you're authentic, if you're yourself, and if you can talk to them on their level, they'll respect you, and you can get them to do anything. And that talk really inspired me. So The next year, when I had to choose a new direction since economics wasn't really going the way it should, I chose for education, and it was love at first sight with my first internship, and I really loved doing it, inspiring pupils, you're just being a really small part of their lives, but you can try to make it memorable, the part you're in.
I think so that's fantastic. I think it's interesting to hear that a bar visit was.
But after a few pints.
Yeah. But I think bar visits are always a good component in the story.
Yeah, the informal learning actually.
So the inspiration came from that. Do you still work with a similar target group in your school? Is it also students that are struggling, or how is the
No, not really. The school that guy was in was like the hands-on education, like car mechanics and welders and plumbers, and with a lot of students with a migration background. I've been in a similar school with a lot of people from different parts of the world. For 10 years, it was a school with only 300 pupils, but with over 70 different nationalities.
Wow.
But then I chose a school closer to home and where I'm at, like the deep rural center of Belgium. It's very mono-ethnic. We have a few students with migrant backgrounds, but all pupils are like fluent in our native language. It's a really, I'm a lucky guy with my public. They're seldom any trouble. They're really well behaved. There are no living together issues or anything. So
and now you can,
I'm a lucky guy.
And you can bike to take the bike to work now as well.
Yeah.
I think that's also a good quality.
If it's not raining, I'm not much for rain.
Good. We talked a bit about some of the things that you really like in education.
Yeah.
And you told me that for you it's very important to work with the motivation of the students.
Exactly.
Can you dive a bit more into your strategies for motivating your students and your work in that area?
Yeah. When I started teaching, I found out that some topics no one likes. There are topics that really, literally no one likes except for me. So I was like, I was like, yay, grammar, yay, different kinds of words. And my pupils were like, we really don't care. We totally do not want to learn this. So I was like, how can we get them to maybe not like it, but want to achieve something? And you can be like, you have to know this for university, you have to know this in later life. And they will be like, yeah, boring. Mm. So then I was like, I've always been kind of a gamer ever since I played Final Fantasy VII on the original PlayStation. I was like totally blown away with the system. Like, the game never gets boring because you always end up with a new chapter, with a story or with an achievement. And I try to build that into my teaching. Like, there's always a short-term reason behind it. You have to know that type of word because we're going to listen to a very popular song, which gets a totally different meaning if you misinterpret that word. Or you can only go to the next level of IT if you've completed this level. And if you've completed this level, you are no longer an apprentice, but now you are a master, or stuff like that. Like, make it engaging and make it motivating.
Yeah, I find that really, really fascinating. Also, just to as teachers, to dive into those mechanisms that are built into a lot of games, and being curious on why it isn't getting boring to play the same game 5 or 6 hours a day. I think we could, in education, learn a lot from those things. And also when we are designing or developing new learning content, that I think we have a tradition that we are much more focused on that the facts are correct and what should they learn and how is the curriculum and so on.
Yeah, what the curriculum. That's also like a magic word, the curriculum.
But if you would much more interested in how would it actually be exciting to read those articles or going through this material, how could we actually make that interesting journey as well? I think we can learn so much from the game developer community in that area.
Yeah, exactly. And not just video games, but like real life games as well. I've got these colleagues of mine, they teach history, and they've developed this kind of game that explains trade in Europe from the early 500s until the 1500s. And it's with like, if you level up, you go to a new age. And you can trade different kind of things because the trade markets developed. And they used the historically important families as parts of the game, like the Medici's in Italy, for example.
Okay.
And it's so worked out. So I was like, all right, I'm going to create some visuals for you. I'm going to design a gaming board for you so that it gets even more interesting. And with 3D printers, you can build beautiful pawns so that not just the game itself is interesting, but also the way it's presented is teaching 2.0, like new level. And I'm really fascinated by what other colleagues can do, which is also what I find brilliant about the distinguished educator community. You learn so much by just, you know, talking to you right now. We've talked about some things about designing classrooms and talking to the other people, the other people at ADE. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's something really valuable in coming together with all those different traditions in education and different experiences. And I think also in the EMEA region that we are so many small different countries, as I think also the variety and ways we do things are really interesting.
Exactly.
And I think having those discussions across borders is something that really accelerates new ideas and innovation in general when cultures they meet. And
yeah, as I wasn't on Twitter before the Institute, and the other distinguished educators from Belgium were like, my God, you're not on Twitter? You're missing out on so much. So I think like Institute day one, I created a Twitter account and I started following people. And it's so rich, everything you get. Right now I'm doing this best of Twitter newsletter for my colleagues.
Okay.
And I'm like just making screenshots, copying links and being like, you have to check this guy out. You have to check this person out. It's amazing what they're doing. Just follow them or just follow the links. And then everyone is like, wow, this is good. This is great. No one has sent back to me like, this is total rubbish. Like everyone likes those things. So
is that a PDF that you create for them or just an email newsletter? Or?
I just email it to them through our school system.
Okay.
I can select like, for instance, Paul Hamilton did something with AR about physics.
Yeah.
So I can select every colleague that teaches physics.
Ah, okay. So they also try to make it specific for the
Yeah, because yeah. I think like a PE teacher or religious education teacher, if I send them something, you can do something with gravity in AR, they will be like, okay. Yeah. Okay, how does this affect my physical education? No, it doesn't.
But I think actually in PE, if they have to learn something about a basket or something, that would be a lot of gravity.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, they can work cross-curricular there.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that. You're already enriching my environment.
At Paul Hamilton, he is really doing amazing stuff on the AR front. It's
Yeah, it is. He's like a walking course in AR.
Yeah, so that could be our... both our recommendation for this episode to follow Paul Hamilton if you're not already doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Follow him on LinkedIn, follow him on Twitter. It's you'll amazing. Get blown away every day.
But you built in your classes mechanisms from both from analog games and digital games.
Yeah.
Can you dive a bit more into that, how that looks like in your classes than that?
Now, a big part, I think, is getting to know your class before you decide to use it. Because in some classes, like World of Classcraft is a great tool.
Mm.
But I experienced it only works well with like 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds. I've tried it with 15-year-olds. It doesn't work anymore. Mm. And in some classes, it does. In other classes, they don't like it. You really have to focus and get to know your group.
Yeah.
And once you've got that figured out, like this group is really, they're really into the rewarding system. All right, let's go full gamification and with levels and with classcraft or with like analog things. Like if you accumulate that many A's on tests, you can do this in class. And sometimes they're like really into story-driven games.
Mm-hmm.
So for Dutch... I say like, okay, we've learned these building stones about what makes a story work, the protagonist and tension and spaces. Give me some input. I'll create a story and I'll tell part of the story every week.
Ah, okay.
And in some classes that were great, like 2 years ago, I had this class and they created their own story. Like every week, someone else wrote a chapter. And they were really getting into that.
Yeah.
So with literature, we did role-playing. Like I worked out this kind of Dungeons and Dragons game. Everyone had a character. All I needed was like two dice to roll. And I built in the components, key components of literature that they could discover in treasure chests. And when someone died, it was a big drama in the entire class because my character is dead. What am I going to do? Don't worry, I'm a necromancer. I'll resurrect you. And it's with every class, it's different.
Yeah.
But there are always possibilities. But it's a big process to develop something. There are a lot of great things on the market.
Yeah.
But if you want to tailor it to size for your curriculum, it takes a lot of time, but it's endlessly rewarding. In my opinion.
And it could be so interesting also to look into how we could take that work that you are doing there and find a format where teachers easily can adapt that to their content and their classroom, but so that people don't have to start from scratch. But actually, I think that could be a totally new take on developing learning materials.
Exactly. And what I struggled most with was like, how do I create, where do I start, what do I put in, how do I do it? So I created my plan to develop game-based learning, and I'm doing workshops with teachers who want to get into it themselves. Right now, the part I'm still struggling with is like the graphic design. If you want to make it appealing, it has to look great.
Yeah.
But I'm not much of an artist myself, so I have to go online and look for images, which is kind of tricky because most of them are like, well, people put effort into that. Yeah. You can't just take it. So that's the part I'm still working on. How do we make it really good looking?
Well, I think there's also finding the inspiration there and. Yeah, personally, I love making most of my materials in Keynote, and I think that is a tool where it is quite easy. Of course, we can mess things up, and but it is also quite easy to make something that's really beautiful. And I think a lot of good graphic designers they also use a lot of time on research and getting inspired by each other. So
yeah. Yes, and now since the Institute, when we found out everything you can do with the new pages,
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get graphical again.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a try and create something myself. But again, it takes time.
Yeah, it does. But yeah, that's right. I think both pages and also numbers that it's so important to remember that they have much more... possibilities than just being a text editor, or that you really can make graphic appealing work in there. And right now I'm looking into numbers and how to use that as some kind of workbook where my students then easily could find they're working with a business model canvas, SWOT analysis and so on, so they can have all those models in that they have to use apply. But then they have the template there, and then they can put their data in it. But I was just surprised that I think the Excel and numbers are so. Of course, there are some core features that are the same.
Yeah.
But I think if you are a hardcore economics guy, that's people will of course prefer maybe Excel. But I think if you want to make things visually appealing and make a workbook, there's some totally new opportunities and numbers that I think I need to explore more.
Yeah, exactly. And the same goes for pages.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing this poster project right now in my IT lessons where my pupils have to create a poster about the curriculum, like do a poster on digital literacy, do a poster on privacy. And I was like, you can use this tool, you can use this online tool, or you can use Pages.
Yeah.
Just log into your iCloud account. If you don't have it, just create one and be creative.
Yeah.
Try what possibilities are there. Because like normally in a lot of schools, they're like, yeah, I'm teaching IT. I'm teaching Word.
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't be teaching Word. You should be teaching a text editor and broaden their minds. You've got Word. You've got OpenOffice. You've got Pages.
Yeah.
Teach them all.
Yeah, definitely. And I know you're also doing a lot of stuff on flipped learning, flipping the classroom. Please dive into it.
Yeah, I think it comes from a sort of laziness from my part. I was teaching grammar and I found myself saying the same exact things over and over and over and over again. And while half of the classroom was like, yeah, we get it, Mr. Teacher, shut up, we get it, let us do the exercises. And the other half was like, we don't get it, say it again. So then I was like, if I do the explanation once and I combine it with my keynote, I turn it into a movie, I put it on YouTube, and the pupils who understand it, well, let's do some exercises, let's dive into it, let's go more in depth. And the pupils who don't quite have the basics, take out your iPhone, put in your headphones, and watch it again until it's clear. And if you've got some more questions, just ask. But I'm not going to repeat myself 70 times. And I got into that. I did it for grammar. And then I was like, maybe I can do a common errors thing. So after this test of English, which was like kind of horrible, with like terrible mistakes, I listed up which mistakes were most made, and I created a video saying like, this is wrong for this reason, this is wrong for this reason. And I've been using this video since it's mistakes that a lot of Belgian kids make, because of they think in Dutch when they should be thinking in English. So I can use it over and over again. And I could just say, you know, we're going to do an exercise, but before you do it, watch this video at home so you don't make those errors.
So it was really that the things that they used to hear in class when they came in, they did that as a homework instead so that you could have much more hands-on and group work time in class.
Exactly. So. Especially now with in England, sorry for all the English listeners, but we're on the continent, we're kind of interested in how the Brexit is going to turn out. So I created this video about what's the difference between the British Isles, the UK, Great Britain, what's up with Ireland, Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, the Isle of Ireland, what's up with that? How does that work? I posted it on YouTube. I told my pupils from my class, watch it at home, because next lesson we're going to talk about Brexit and back then Theresa May. So you have to know this. I put it on YouTube just for my class, which there were like 26 pupils. I had two classes, so like just over 50. And then my colleagues picked it up. They're like, oh my God, that's a great video. We're going to use that. So that was like I had a reach of like 250 pupils. I've got up until this moment, for famous YouTubers, it's nothing, but for me, it's quite a lot. I've got 5,000 views.
Wow.
Of that video. Yeah. So I was like, I did something that a lot of people find useful, and it's really rewarding to see that.
Definitely it is, and I think sometimes that can also open up some unexpected new possibilities for us as teachers, that we suddenly reach a new audience that we hadn't expected.
Exactly. Yeah, and I'm creating materials for my own comfort.
Yeah.
But if someone else can use it, yeah, great. I'm using other people's resources as well. That's why we're in the business.
Yeah, and I had a couple of years ago when I was teaching, I always tried to have a new project every year, a new dogma that I wanted to explore. So one year it was that I only wanted to make projects where companies from the outside were involved. But one year it was also that I wanted to, each time when I gave instruction or went through some materials that they had to know about a certain topic or something, that I put up my iPhone on a tripod and had a little lavalier mic on. And then I just said, okay, it took 1 minute to set up, but then I recorded those and then put up on YouTube for my students to see. And I really liked that both. It made me much more aware, because I had to see those videos myself, which was quite painful.
Yes, it is.
So I think it's also a really good way to evaluate the own practice and how we are standing in front of the students. But also I got aware of, oh, that's boring. That's long time I used for it. So I also saw that year that I was really cutting down the time and getting much more focused when I was explaining new topics to the students. Yeah,
exactly. That's it. I try to make my videos 5 minutes at most.
Yeah.
And an explanation that I would take like 20 minutes in class, but you really have to cut down on the crap that you and on the jokes and just like, what's the core business? What's it about? Let's do it in 5 minutes. No nonsense. Maybe a funny animation, but that's it. Yeah. And just like, watch this and you know it. 5 minutes tops. Yeah. Yeah. The attention span of a pupil is like 10 minutes, so let's not go crazy with that.
Yeah. And I think we so often forget that in the classroom. And myself included, I think too many teachers, we like to hear ourselves talking.
Yeah, except when we record ourselves. Yeah. When we record ourselves, it sounds horrible.
Yeah.
If I listen to this podcast, I'm going to be like, that's not me. That's not my voice. No.
Exactly. So, but I also think it's interesting when the students, when you're working that way, you give the students also the opportunity to have much more hands-on time of work with the topics in practical use and exploring it themselves. And I think actually that's the most valuable about it, that you're actually giving your students more time to work on their own.
Yeah, and also, and this is maybe a bit stupid, but they feel like they're in control.
Yeah.
Like they can swipe you away if they're done with you.
Yeah.
and at home they can be like, I'm going to watch it again because I didn't quite get it. They don't have to wait until they're in the classroom again.
Yeah.
So you're giving them some sort of ownership of learning. I'm going to learn right now. Now I'm going to stop learning. I'm tired of his voice. Swipe away. So I really like that idea.
I think that ownership is a very, very important component and getting motivated, that you actually feel that you have control over what and when you need to learn something.
And it's like what I said earlier about motivation, to get them into the ownership, to trick them in. It's like the games. Hey, come on, it's fun. You can earn something. And then when they're really into the subject, then you can use flipped classroom to give them control.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, they're like, they want to learn. They know when to learn and they know how to learn. So go on.
Yeah.
Go on, my Padawan. You are ready. So,
are your students also creating those videos at a certain point themselves? Have you worked with that?
Not yet, but I'm planning it in this year. Because, well, the Institute was so inspiring with like Keynote, and Keynote for iOS has gotten some new features, I think, earlier this week. And with the fact that most of my pupils have got an iPhone or they can work on Keynote just in the cloud, I'm going to broaden up. I'm going to go outside of my subject fields and give them an assignment. Take a subject from anything you've learned. It could be mathematics, it could be physics, it could be PE. Make a short video, and then we're going to discuss the criteria together. And I'm going to try to give away some control and go like, all right, make something. I'm curious, you've got this many lessons, create something.
I think that's beautiful with that level of choice, that they really can choose as the one part that they want to dive more into. I think that's
it's
a beautiful part about learning, when we suddenly see that it's not us coming with that topic, but they say, okay, I don't want to stop learning in this area. That is really exciting for me, and now I want to dive into it. I think often we have to tight schedule that we don't have the opportunity to give them those opportunities to.
Exactly, and I've got the IT. I have to make them aware of multimedia. And I can say to them, you are an expert at some level.
Mm.
Please share your knowledge. I think that's like where I want to go with the ownership. Like, you know, for my STEM pupils, they know a lot more about physics than I do because I'm not a physics teacher. It's like, all right, teach me in a video.
Yeah.
Tell me what you know, a part of instead of the other way around. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'll keep you posted.
please do. And I would like to hear a bit about with every guest that I have this interesting conversations with. I'm really into future scenarios right now for education. So I know it's hard, but what I really would love to hear a bit about your thoughts on what kind of changes do you think we would see in education, or what kind of changes do you hope we are going to see in education over the next years, or maybe in the long run. I think we both will be in education before we retire 30 years. So a lot of things can happen.
Who knows?
But what are some of those things that you hope you will see while you are not still teaching? Sorry for making this short little break, but before we hear Jan's answer, I want to use the opportunity to tell you that I recently had the opportunity myself to answer some very similar questions, and that was on the podcast, EduChat Podcast, Technology in the Classroom. And that's a really cool podcast made by Martin Kurtz, one of my friends, a fellow ADE, and I think it's really worth listening to his podcast in general. It's a very, very good podcast series, and I have added it in the show notes. I just want to play a small sound snippet of our conversation that Martin had together with me on his podcast. Definitely not.
No.
So I think those basic assumptions will open up a discussion so that
early on, we talked about, should we ban mobile technology in the classroom and so on. So if we can all agree on, okay, it's going to be more connected globally, it's going to be hyper-digital compared to where we are today. The world is going to be complex as it is today. So what kind of skills should we then teach? And that leads us a bit back to those challenge-based learning skills, yeah, and future skills, I think. But also, when we talk with school leaders about this uncertainty, say, yeah, okay, we know that we will live in an uncertain future where we can't predict exactly what will happen. So adaptability will be a necessary good skill to have. How could we teach people to be high?
So if you want to hear more from that conversation, you should definitely consider to subscribe to Martin's podcast, EduChat Podcast. And it was really a pleasure to be have the opportunity to be a guest on his podcast. But now let's head back to my conversation with Jan and hear about Jan's visions for the future of education. So now back to the conversation with Jan.
I hope that all the technological breakthroughs are going to lead us somewhere where we can really create experts. There are our pupils will become experts in fields of their choosing, but that we don't go to like a, if you have a level of knowledge like from 1 to 100, I think it used to be like if everyone has got 50 or 60 on everything, that's great. But I think that technology will enable us to make sure that some pupils reach level 100 for like mathematics. They still have an acceptable 70 for languages, but they can go the extra mile. They can become an expert. They can find out what their passion is. And we can stimulate them and give them every chance to explore that on top of the curriculum. Like using technology to really differentiate and to make them follow their passions.
So that the technology gives us some opportunity that they not only are following the pace of a class, but much more individualizing it.
Exactly.
Okay.
So when they've learned everything they need to learn, well, it doesn't stop there. Like, go further, go beyond. Yeah. Use technology to find out, to be inspired and to inspire others. They're like, actually, the definition of ownership of learning, actually.
Yeah. And I think that will be also something that's really important that we, as schools, think about how can we become better at actually having respect for the time that the students spend in school. I think this idea that a classroom moves through a subject at more or less the same pace, and I think a lot of us are interested in individualized learning, but in practice it's really, really difficult sometimes.
Hard, yeah.
It's hard. But I think also it's just not an efficient way that 30 students have to go through the materials more or less in the same pace, because some of them, they find it's too fast so that they don't get enough out of it. And for others, it's just too slow and they're
exactly
getting unengaged and zooming out. And then I think in business, we would never have that approach that we would have much more focus on efficiency. And I think you can have a focus on efficiency and having it engaging, fun, motivating at the same time.
Yeah, efficiency is indeed a key word. Like, how do we make the most of those few hours that we see the pupils? How do we make sure we and our subject makes a lasting impression?
Yeah, so you said something about that also in the beginning, where I thought I know we can't do that for every lesson, but I always have tried to say, okay, doing a school year for each class, I want to make 2 or 3 experiences that I think, okay, when they, in 25 years, think back on their school time, that would be the lessons or the experiences or the challenges that they will still remember.
Yes, sometimes when I talk to ex-pupils, they're like, oh, do you remember that time when we did that? And that just warms my heart. It's like, I made a small dent in their universe, and and that's why we're in the business.
Yeah.
To inspire and to make an impression.
Yeah, so let's hope that technology will help us make those dents and give them that they can remember a larger percent of their hours together with us as something rememberable and
something exactly, that was
quite
yeah.
fun and not boring. Do you have other when you see in technology, we talked about AR and so on, are there other things that you are thinking are going into will be game changers in education for the next years?
Yeah, you you just said it yourself in the question, game changers. If I look at what's possible in the gaming industry, it's amazing. If I went to Italy a couple of summers ago to Tuscany, and I knew my way in some villages because I had played Assassin's Creed. I said to my wife, like, if you follow this street, we'll end up in a square. She was like, we've never been here. I have been in the 15th century, and it's still there. And a lot of, like, World War II games, World War I games, my colleagues are like, we want to use this to make it to visualize the horror of the war, to visualize art. And I'm really hoping that game developers like EA and Ubisoft will come up with... You've got Apple Arcade right now with, like, indie games. I'm kind of hoping for a platform with educational levels.
Yeah.
That you can say, we're discussing the Normandy landing today. Take out your iPad, play the level of Medal of Honor, and you have an idea of what it was like. 5 minutes of gaming, really engaging, and you've got the experience. So that's kind of what I think will be the next big thing. Because it combines everything. It combines motivation, it combines games, it combines, if you're using it through Google Cardboard or Oculus Rift, it combines virtual reality, and it's all within the curriculum. So I think that'll be the next leap, I hope.
Yeah, and I hope that we really can and come together as businesses that people from the game industry, people from education and from research can develop those things together. But I think also we see that disruption already coming, that if we schools not find a way to rediscover how we can develop content. Because if I look at my own kids, I think they are learning so much from actually quite good YouTube content. Of course, they're also sometimes they see some crappy videos that I don't understand why they use their time on that. But I think they also have learned so much from... One of my kids is very much into insects right now and sees a lot of YouTube videos about that. He's 8 years old and find insects and dinosaurs really engaging. And I think sometimes that he is actually getting some learning experiences and some knowledge that he don't get at school.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think actually if we need to have that dialogue with those kind of businesses and see how can we actually embrace the qualities that the game developers can offer and that YouTube can offer. And
it will come at a price, of course, but I think if it's properly managed, it'll be worth it. There's so much going on in education that's just not okay anymore. I've posted a tweet a couple of weeks ago. My oldest daughter, she's also 8 years old, had a first music lesson, and she came back crying because it was looking at a blackboard and only writing down notes, and that was it. Yeah. So I was like, you're not going there anymore. Here's your iPad. Here's GarageBand.
Yeah.
Do the challenge with the four chords. Just get started. And she was like doing it an evening long. She had a song that was really okay. I was like, see, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Being inspired, doing stuff, discovering stuff, and not staring at a blackboard for an hour at a very slow pace.
Yeah, and I find it so interesting. I was convinced that I couldn't do anything with music myself.
Yeah, me too.
I had the most boring music lessons, and also a very honest teacher that told me not to sing that loud because it was terrible.
Oh my god!
And only gave me one clavis so that I couldn't make any sound. Because but yeah, so I was in my end 30s before I discovered Garage Band and get inspired by the challenges that the other ADs are doing, and suddenly discovering, okay, maybe I'm not an expert yet, but it's actually not that intimidating, and it's actually a lot of fun to explore this and being on this learning journey together. And so I think, yeah, using that, those online communities, finding those also as kids, getting access to inspiring people, it could be so much more powerful, and we have to embrace that as schools.
Yeah, I think you just summarized my entire vision on learning with the music stuff. Getting inspired, being creative, finding out it's not intimidating, exploring. That's what it should be about.
Yeah. And it's been fantastic to have this conversation.
Yeah,
and exactly. I would love to give you the opportunity to give a challenge to our listeners. Or a question that you think could be interesting to reflect on for them, to take some of those concepts that you have talked about a bit further and, or implement in their own practice.
Yeah, my question would be for all teachers, and I also ask myself the same question from time to time, is how do you motivate your pupils to go the extra mile, to do the extra thing, to want to excel, to want to be an expert themselves? How do you motivate them?
Ah, okay. So getting this inner flame that you really want to push things further.
Exactly. How do you light the flame?
Okay. Fantastic. Jan, thank you very much for your time this morning. It has been truly inspiring. And
thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, and I definitely think there will be some things that I also wanting to explore further with the gamification and remember to be aware of the things that we can flip in the classroom so that we can give our students more time to actually work actively with the content instead of listening to us teachers that can be a bit boring sometimes.
Yeah, we try not to be, but we can be.
Yeah. So now I think I will head off and take a new cup of coffee and write down new ideas.
That's a great idea. I'm going to do the same thing. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow, I truly, truly enjoyed today's conversation with Jan. I think it's so inspiring how he works with motivation, how he uses flipped learning and gamification to motivate his students. I hope that you will take maybe 5-10 minutes, hit the pause button on your podcast player before you jump into the next podcast. Take you 5-10 minutes, brainstorm a bit on how can you maybe use some of those techniques that Jan is using, or like gamification, flipped learning, or maybe it's some other ingredients or some other components that you could use in your classroom. But I think actually it could be really fun for all of us to take a small break, take 10 minutes where we reflect on how could I next week create motivation in a new way in my classroom. So please join in and work with motivation and new ways to do that. Work with gamification, flipped learning, and so on. And dear listener, I'm so thankful that you are listening to those conversations that I have with those amazing Apple Distinguished Educators from 2019. And there are so many interesting educators all over the world. So, but on those in this podcast series, it's the Apple Distinguished Educators that I talk to, but I really appreciate that there are so many educators in general worldwide that are doing such amazing work with their students. I truly think that a lot of teachers are those silent heroes that we don't hear much about in our everyday life, but I think teachers, they have the ability to do tremendous work for kids and inspire kids to go the extra mile, find the motivation, believe in that they can accomplish things that are even bigger than they thought what was possible. So yeah, teachers are doing some really valuable work that are not getting the recognition it should get. So let's keep on inspiring each other. Let's keep giving kids the best possibilities to solve the problems that the world is facing, and but especially that they can reach their own dreams. I think teachers are a very, very valuable component in that helping kids achieve the big dreams they often have as kids. But I think with the right teachers and with supporting parents, kids, they can really achieve a lot. So thank you for the important work that you are doing. And keep on doing your amazing work, and until next episode.